What is going on, everyone? My name is Jared Haas, and welcome to this week's episode of Dropping the Hammer with Daniel McFadden. I'm not Daniel McFadden here, but joining me is, of course, Daniel McFadden. Welcome back, is all I gotta say.
Yeah, it's very, very, very good to be here, and I mean that sincerely.
I was traveling back from Road America, which we'll be touching on this week's topic, in the middle of the race, and I'm in my layover in Atlanta, and all of a sudden, I'm just scrolling through social media, and I just see Daniel McFadden's post from a hospital bed, and I'm like, what the heck happened to Daniel McFadden? And I was concerned with that, because I'm like, I'm in Atlanta, I'm coming back to Little Rock, I'm like, what was going on? So, glad that you're back here, to say the least, in the studio. I was hoping you got released. I was kind of concerned, but you're feeling a lot better.
Yes, I'm feeling a lot better than I was for Sunday evening. It's a complete 180, to say the least. I had an issue with alcohol withdrawals. It was bad, very, very bad. Nothing to joke about. But I am fine. I'm okay. I got out, Monday morning. Yeah, it was bad. I really don't know what else to say other than I'm very happy to be here. I'm very happy to, be functioning and able to talk NASCAR, even though I did not get to watch much NASCAR, this weekend. Jared, you saw more racing than I did. I got to watch the final, like, I don't know, five laps of, I saw the first stage of Sunday's race. In the middle of the second stage, I was in the back of an ambulance on my way to a local hospital here. And while sitting in the waiting room of said hospital, I was able to watch the final five laps of Chris Buescher's win in the Cookout 400 at Richmond Raceway. So I don't have a lot to provide about that race specifically, except historical data, historical stuff. But yeah, couldn't tell you about strategy or anything. All I know is Brad Keselowski led a lot of laps, apparently. Bubba Wallace did too. Tyler Reddick won the first stage. Who won the second stage?
It was Keselowski.
Okay. All right.
It was really, a strategy day. Again, with that travel coming back here from Wisconsin to here in Arkansas, I missed basically more of what you missed in the middle of the race. I was able to watch the start, then have to go through security and get through the airport, all that stuff, and have some dinner because I had a red eye coming into Arkansas, so I had to make sure to get some food. So I saw about 50, 40 laps on that race. And again, with Richmond, it's so weird. It's become a tire strategy race.
Yeah.
It's become, usually, like I said, tracks age like this, they're bigger. It's not like the Richmond action track that people like to think. You know, they put Richmond more, categorized it like a few years ago on Bristol and Martinsville, and now it's like you almost can categorize this as a mile and a half. Your thought process on this type of racing at Richmond, where it's tire wear strategy to a T. You have to perform well.
Yeah, well, I mean, no, it was like this last year. Last year when Chris Buescher arguably should have won that race. He got passed late by Kevin Harvick with, I think, 7-ish laps to go or something like that. And Harvick went on the win, but I picked Truex, Martin Truex Jr. to win this race. My second pick would have been Chris Buescher.
Yeah.
Just because of what he did last year, and he pulled it off this year.
Mm-hmm.
So congratulations to RFK Racing. They now have two wins under their belt as as RFK Racing. And it's the first win for that team at Richmond since the fall of 2013 when Carl Edwards won. And it's the first time since also then that the RFK's two most recent wins came on short tracks, because Edwards won at Richmond in the fall in 2013, and then he followed that up in the spring the following year with a Bristol win. So we can no longer say that RFK Racing is a team only to watch out for on super speedways. they are now threats almost anywhere. What you said, it's turned into long run races. And as I heard, I think on the NASCAR and NBC podcast on my way into work this week, it's kind of turned into what, at least strategy wise, kind of like what you'd see on road courses.
Well, I find it interesting. I'll have to pull this stat up here, but it's a really flip-floppy race because you had in the spring that the Chevys were dominant. You had Kyle Larson taking the victory. And
did he even sniff the front at all? No. Race?
Like I said, if you look at the top 10, it's a lot of blue ovals and some Toyotas in there. So let me look this up because in the springtime, Chevy led 244 laps. And
wow,
the race yesterday, Sunday, zero.
Yep.
Ford, on the other hand, led one lap in April and then 201 laps this past weekend. And we got to give a shout out to Alan Cabana and Dalton Hopkins with those stats.
Wow.
But it's a really flop, and it proves the point that Chevy starts out strong in the season.
Mm-hmm.
And then Toyota gains their momentum, and then Ford has their ebb and flows. And I think this is one of their higher ebbs on this stuff. And we have
looking at the order, Chase Elliott was the highest running Hendrick car in 13th, and then Alex Bowman's 18th, Kyle Larson's 19th, and William Byron was 21st.
Yeah, it's a lot of strategy call right there, so, right? You know, strategy is going to play a big effect in that. And I think a lot of the Hendrick cars were falling behind. But let's listen to some of Chris Buescher's thoughts after winning here at Richmond.
Yeah, here's what he had to say, teeing it up. He talks about how he doesn't believe RFK Racing is going to be a placeholder when it comes to what happens in the playoffs compared to when Buescher last was in the playoffs in 2016 when he won at Pocono.
I believe so. I think that would have been his last time because he wasn't in the playoffs this past season.
Yeah,
that is correct.
So yeah. So he doesn't believe the team's going to be a placeholder in the playoffs. So here's what he has to say about that.
You were effectively in the playoffs before today. I mean, things would have had to go completely sideways for you and some other things would have happened. But now you're in. And has that really kind of sunk in that you're in the playoffs? And what does that mean?
It means we don't have to talk about points anymore. And I love that. So I've been fairly vocal for myself, especially. Not one to shout, but I hate points racing. I've always hated points racing. And I didn't want us to get in that trap that the 17 team was points racing as we've been heading towards the cutoff for the playoffs. And, I've said that consistently. And we've talked about that as a team that obviously it has to be in the back of our minds because, you know, we are in a good spot in points. We've worked hard to have that consistency, but we're not indestructible where we were at. And that a win would take care of everything. And that's our sport. Winning fixes everything. And it fixes the points talk. It fixes morale. It fixes bad weekends before. Everything can be changed by winning. So, from that standpoint, that's it's awesome that we are in the playoffs. That was part of our goal at the beginning of the season. As RFK, we talked about winning races. Making the playoffs and being able to be a contender in the playoffs. You know, we don't want to be a placeholder by any means either. And when I look at the races that we have in the first half of the playoffs especially, I feel really confident that we can be a contender and we can move forward.
All right, Jared. So let's go through the top 10 for the Cookout 400 at Richmond Raceway.
Now, a lot of blue ovals here with Chris Buescher obviously winning the race. Denny Hamlin, controversy last week. He got the win at Pocono, finishes second here at Richmond. Kyle Busch kind of had an up-and-down day, finishes third. Joey Logano came out of nowhere on that restart, finished fourth. Ryan Preece gets a top five. His best season finish before that was 12th. Keselowski was 6th. Martin Truex Jr., 7th. Eric Almirola was 8th. Austin Dillon, Kyle Busch's teammate, was in 9th, and Kevin Harvick rounds out the top 10.
And for Ryan Preece, this is a big deal. Like you said, previous best finish was 12th. Like, this is only his third career top five finish.
Yeah.
And the first two were on super speedways.
And I've kind of mentioned this on another podcast too, that Ryan Preece was trying to light a fire under him. You know, he was in the headlines the past few weeks, especially what happened at Pocono, and I think it was a week before that too. He's had some incidents getting involved, and he felt like he's getting pushed around, right? And, you know, he tried to take a stand, but now this was taking a stand. He finished the race. You know, he was able to complete the stuff because Martinsville, he led 135 laps and had that slip through his hand. And besides that Martinsville race, he only led 6 laps this season. So this is definitely a bright spot for the 41 team in Stuart Haas Racing.
But yeah, Stuart Haas, dude, all 4 of their cars, top 11. That's crazy.
It's a much needed thing considering how much talk is around Stuart Haas Racing and their struggles.
Absolutely. But yeah, that's great day for RFK Racing. I'm not sure how deep of a playoff run they could potentially make, because I know, you know, Keselowski's pretty much solidly in right now, unless he just screws the pooch in the last 4 races. But they're there. There can be a... Let's make a bet, Jared. All right. Okay. All right.
I like how this is going here.
Okay. So, as of right now, the 2 race winners who, you know, at first blush might not make deep runs. Yeah. Though, but you have predicted that Ricky Stenhouse Jr. can make it to the round of 12.
Yes.
Okay. So now we have Chris Buescher.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I don't know what exactly we're going to wager here, but I'll take Chris Buescher. You take Stenhouse. Who makes the deeper run? Whoever.
I think they both get out in the round of 12. I think they can both manage through, get around a 16. There's a lot of chaos that can happen where they can sneak into the round of 8, but I'm not like, oh wow, they're going to be drivers that are going to go into the round of 8, like waltzing in. You would think like a Denny Hamlin or even like Martin Truex, William Byron, Kyle Busch. They're going to have to grit their way in. But I think the more interesting tale is the cut line that's going on. Chase Elliott now only 40 points behind, and his teammate Alex Bowman, I believe, is 42 points. Chase Elliott has leapfrogged his teammate Alex Bowman. It was a solid weekend for Chase Elliott. You know, he's gained some ground a little bit on that, even though not really a good day. Everyone else around that cut line had a bad day. You know, Ty Gibbs finished 15th. You had Almendinger was 27th. You had Suarez was 33rd. So he was at least able to capitalize in the fact that he didn't have a terrible day. So Chase Elliott made up some ground on those drivers and is inching closer.
Chase Elliott, he got 4 stage points, but Ty Gibbs got 19.
Mm-hmm. And then also Michael McDowell, he finished 22nd.
Ooh.
So it was not a good day for those cutoff drivers. But again, we only have 4 races left. 2 races ago, it was 60 points in 6 races. Now it's 4 races and 40 points. So he's making up the track of 10 points per races in those past 2. So it's still going to be borderline with this.
Brian Newman finished 29th.
Good run.
In that Rick Ware Racing car. As you mentioned before we started recording, the last place car, which was BJ McLeod, only finished 5 laps off the lead.
Again, it shows you the attrition that's not really of wrecking versus strategy that's on with the Cup Series, especially the Cup Series at Richmond. This is not the first race that at Richmond they've had all the cars running. I think it was like 2018, a fall race.
I mean, there was only 3 cautions, and 2 of them were the stages. And so you had that last one where Mr. Noah Gragson got into Daniel Suarez with 8 laps to go.
Mm-hmm.
So, wow. Like,
and Suarez just had it. It was just a terrible, no good day. He about got lapped in stage 1, was able to keep it up, and then just lost he was four laps down and was involved in that wreck. So it wasn't a good day for the cut line, but I mean, we still got some interesting storylines and still quite a bit close going into these final four races before the playoffs.
So yeah, Richmond Raceway doesn't really need to be called the extra track anymore, but if you want old school strategy races, then it's the place to be.
Yeah,
it really is. I don't believe it needs two races on the schedule. And again, judging by the crowd that I saw on TV, not even remotely.
Here's the thing: it doesn't need to be during the day. I understand the product needs, you know, there's stuff to do around Richmond, but you're sitting in that heat, Daniel, and
but the racing's better in the day.
Is it though? I mean, you're still going to have a warm track late at night. Again, do you want fan comfort or do you want product?
Product.
we'll see about that, but I think that wraps up about our Cup Series coverage.
So now I'm just turning the next segment just over to you, Jared.
Yes.
It's now you. This is all you. Like I said, I saw four laps of this race. I thought Sage Karam had a good shot to win. Didn't. And instead, it went to Mr. 20-year-old Sam Mayer. So tell me about what led to Sam Mayer getting his first career NASCAR Xfinity Series win in his 71st start. It was 71st, right?
Yeah, I mean, he's been here for a little while, a couple seasons.
Three years, two full-time.
I didn't realize he actually ran a race for Rick Ware Racing. I mean, excuse me, BJ McLeod Racing.
Really?
Yeah, in Xfinity Series when Junior ran the
Okay, car. Yeah, that makes sense.
So
Wisconsin native.
Yes.
He's from Franklin, Wisconsin, which is a nice 69 miles away from Elkhart Lake in Milwaukee.
Yes.
So,
Us through it. It's a very interesting day. I was up there for frontstretch.com. I flew in, I believe it was Thursday night, so I was able to see the practice, and boy, oh boy, did practice provide a lot of action on that, because they repaved the track, I think, the first time since the 90s,
mm-hmm.
and you had at least seven cars that didn't even really make a qualifying attempt, and it ranges from practice crash, engine issues, rear gear, even a car catching on fire on pit road. And smoking out of it with the 08 of Alex LeBay. And then three more cars had to go to the rear of the field as well. So 10 cars had to start at the rear of the field for this race. So I felt like everywhere I turned, because during that practice session, I was in the garage. Everywhere I turned, there's another car in the garage. There's another car coming in the garage. Here comes another car in the garage. I'm like, I'm trying to keep track of what's going on, what the issues is. And it was pretty crazy keeping track of that. So fast forward to race day. I think one of the bigger topics to talk about is the brakes. We saw two brake failures. First was Chandler Smith, and he had no sign of his brake failure that happened. And both of these brake failures were going to turn one. It seemed like just catastrophic failure on that. Going about 170, I think that's what Chandler Smith's accident went into, going into turn one while hard. And Alex LeBay, he got out of his car, and he actually had to lay down on the gravel pit. That's how hard he hit. So brakes are a little bit more concerned. You know, it's a hotter day, and, you know, that's one of the harder braking points because it's a high-speed straightaway going into a tight turn. You know, that happens, but it's thankfully we're okay. But I want to at least bring in to a little bit of the topic I want to talk about with the caution before the final restart, after the incident with Custer and Sammy Smith and A.J. Allmendinger, on the restart, Connor Mosack was starting on the front row. And he was smoking on the track. His car was smoking on the track. And NASCAR did not throw the caution right away or even black flag him. And NASCAR said that they noticed the issue with the 19 car on the restart, but didn't know if it was oil or water. As soon as they confirmed there was oil on the track, that's when they threw the caution. So my question to be is, how should have NASCAR handled this with this 19 car that's smoking coming to the restart? I thought they would have black flagged him, considering the fact he's up front, he's smoking, it's a narrow track. But NASCAR was still trying to confirm that, whether it was just some water or it was actual oil on the track. And he failed to finish due to rear gear. So it's something from the rear gear oil.
Yeah. It especially on a track that big, if someone's laying down anything, I think you keep the caution out until you can determine what it is. Because, and I'm not someone who, with my trained eye, can tell what smoking means, what they're putting down. Mm-hmm. I don't have that kind of training.
To be mentioned, too, when they threw that caution for the final time, they actually had to red flag the race for about 10 minutes to clean up that oil. That's, like I said, that's the concern about that. They let them too long. Now they have to stop the race instead of adding those caution laps.
At a 4-mile track.
Yeah.
At a 4-mile track.
That's the big issue with that. At least they kept it, most of their caution laps. With Chandler Smith's was 3 caution laps, but they didn't have it where it was like the Truck Series race was like 5 or 6 laps run under caution during the road course. So they've straightened around, but that's kind of more the big, I don't want to say controversy besides the finish on that, but Connor Mosack kind of jumbled it up on the last restart. Justin Allgaier was looking to waltz his way, and then it was just on with Sage Karam and Sam Mayer, and they were battling back and forth in the corners. Park Kligerman was there, and I got some audio as well from Sam Mayer. Let's listen to that real quick. Right.
Here's Sam Mayer talking about what winning at his home track meant.
Been all along and thought, if you can win this one, you can win anywhere. What caused that mindset? Why did you think if this race you win, that you could move forward and win a bunch more?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's just a good omen, maybe. But like at one point halfway through the race, I was like, man, if I can really do this, like with the Cup drivers in the field or whatever, even though we're so far away from Richmond, like if we can do this and put a full race together today, I would be overcoming a lot, because the 00 was really, really good. The 7 was really good. The 10, all things considered, he had a really good car, and he's obviously really good. He's proved that. And I was like, if I can win and beat all these guys today with maybe not the best car in the field, but definitely a good car, I would be super happy with that. And I didn't think it was actually going to happen, but I just had that deep down confidence that it was.
Jared Haas with FrontStretch.com. During the cool down lap, just teammate Justin Allgaier made contact. Did that take you by surprise on that? And what's your thoughts with Allgaier just having one slip away?
Yeah, I mean, it sucks for him, because he was on the losing end of the carnage on the last lap, pretty much. And it wasn't anything of my doing. I just did what I had to. And he was obviously giving a big congratulations, because the first one's a big one, and I'm going to enjoy the crap out of it, especially being here. But yeah, it's just having Josh give me a thumbs up, and Justin, and everyone around me, even competitors that I normally probably wouldn't hear from, give me a thumbs up. It's super cool to be able to see that the sports come together and congratulate a win like that.
All right. Sam Mayer is finally a NASCAR Xfinity Series winner. Context, this is the guy who was coming up through the ranks at the same time as Ty Gibbs. Ty Gibbs and Sam had a pretty heated rivalry going there, which culminated in a fight on pit road at Martinsville after an Xfinity Series race.
That was the spring one.
Was that last year?
Yeah, that was last year. Remember, that was the... That was a spring incident, and then Ty Gibbs with the fall incident with Brandon Jones.
Yeah, Meyer and Gibbs had a history, and Gibbs far and away has had the more successful Xfinity Series career, gets promoted up to Cup, while Sam Mayer, who races for Junior Motorsports, was just kept toiling away, and it just for some reason wasn't finding victory lane, and then he finally does it here. Kind of at the last minute, he only led the final
two laps. Yeah, like I said, it was Allgaier's race. Allmendinger led the first 5, Allgaier led 42, and Sam Mayer led 2 laps, the last 2.
So, Doesn't matter how you get it, really, as long as you get that win, right? Yep. I mean, so, but congratulations to Sam Meyer. So I now believe all four Junior Motorsports full-time drivers have wins now. So Allgaier, yep. Meyer, Barry. And
Brandon Jones, yep.
Brandon Jones. Though Brandon Jones doesn't have a win with...
He has a career win.
Career wins, yes, but he doesn't have one with Junior Motorsports.
Yep.
So, but yeah. Any other takeaways from the weekend in... Okay, first off, just tell me about your drive into Elkhart Lake. When did you... Like I told you this, it's in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
Like, there are no signs that a world-class facility is anywhere in the vicinity of that area. So, like, what was the approach to the track like for you?
It was interesting because I felt like I was more or less at home. You know, felt Illinois. Like the Midwest standards. Yeah. I'm born and raised in Illinois, so Wisconsin. A little bit more dairy cows, but still a lot of fields. So, felt like, you know, just going to my own thing. And then there's this big old hill that you see, and you turn into these gates, and it's like, oh, there's actually a track here. But it's a nice, nice and tucked away. It's not like you see, you know, roads, and it's weird that, like, there's a lot of foliage right near, like, near the track.
Yeah.
And it's like, they really packed in the track here. So I was impressed. I even met the Sargento cheese mascot. I got a string cheese from the mascot when I was out there, so.
But no, Road America, it is very much like a secret country club.
Yeah.
Like, you have to know. You have to know it's there, right? It's
you
like,
have to know it's there.
You got to have the, hey, what's the password? Password. Cheese. It's like, all right, you're in.
Exactly. Yeah.
So it's bizarre to me that it exists, but it's there.
I mean, if you build a racetrack, they will come, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So nice little track. Thankful that I went there. Another track and cross off my list.
All right. So following all that, now let's get into our news roundup for the week. Okay. All right, news roundup for the week. TV ratings are in for Sunday's Cookout 400 at Richmond. It got a 1.41 rating and had 2.43 million viewers. And that was slightly down in rating and slightly up in viewership with a 1.45 rating and 2.39 rating from last year. So that's... Just go. I know ratings important, but the viewership, that's the second week in a row where the race has been up.
Yeah.
From the previous week.
And also, too, I think this time last year they were at NBC at the Indy Road Course. So a little bit of apples to pears, but at least there's that consistent audience. It isn't like we dropped off the radar or something with those ratings. So
yeah, this Richmond race was held in mid August. So, but still, in the wake of the success of Chicago and what that brought, we're still seeing slight upticks in viewership. I think that's a win, don't you think?
It's not earth-shattering, though. That's the thing. I mean, okay. I guess we're not in the decline. At least we're steady. But, you know, it's not like all of a sudden SVG is bringing in, you know, millions of fans to watch every week in and week out. But curious to see how Indy Road Course does, as we announced last week that he's going to be there.
All right, moving on. We got two pretty cool paint schemes to talk about for this weekend's race at Michigan International Speedway. First, Alex Bowman in his number 48 Ally car has a co-sponsorship with the Detroit Pistons. And this scheme... I think the cool kids call it Fire. Is that right, Jared? You're one of those young, hip,
cool kids. I'm literally right on that edge between it. I'm still millennial, but like right on the edge between Gen X. I'm like 2 months away from. I was 2 months away from being a Gen Xer. But
you mean Gen Z?
Well, I got my letters confused, but I'm not confused about this paint scheme because good partnership. It was always good to see those little like. MLB teams or NFL teams that just like co mingle.
But I mean, just looking at it right now, it's like it's got blue and red stripes going across the top of the car and also along the bottom, and you have the Detroit Pistons logo right behind the 48. And it's simple. And simple.
It incorporates both of the Ally branding and the Detroit Pistons branding. So they did a good job.
It's sleek. I like it. It's simple. And paint schemes should be simple.
But let's flip the coin on a not as simple paint scheme as the Detroit Pistons. What's the other paint scheme?
The other paint scheme is Rocket League, which will be on the Tyler Reddick's number 45 Toyota for 2311 Racing. As far as I know, Rocket League's a popular game.
Yeah, it was released back in like July 2015, so it's been a while. It's been out a while. But still, people play it.
But it's splashy. It sticks out.
You can't miss it on track.
I definitely do not think you'd be able to miss this on the track. But I like it. So if it gets eyeballs from a younger audience, sure, why not? Brief tangent. Jared, favorite paint scheme ever. We should have like a separate segment dedicated to this where we just like kind of go down, give our top three. Do you want to do that next week?
Maybe so. I gotta think about that.
Okay,
because there's a lot you could put under the category.
Okay, next week we are gonna share our top three favorite NASCAR paint schemes of all time.
Can we do a category? Can we do one standard paint scheme, one special paint scheme, and then another wild card?
Okay. All right, yeah, I can agree to that.
We need categories for this, but...
Okay, all right.
We'll share a draft.
Okay, so tune into that as a separate special segment where we share our top three. All right, so that'll do it on news this week, unless there was a Bob Pockrass bomb or a Stern bomb that were dropped while we've been recording.
Nothing yet there. Also, they're testing at Richmond Raceway this weekend. That is the other big news.
They're testing right now.
Yes, short track yesterday and today.
Yeah, they're testing a
as I'm recording.
Yeah, they're testing a new splitter where they're hoping will improve the short track package. And I believe one quote from Christopher Bell was that it wasn't a home run.
I saw even today that they're removing the on the rear end the diffuser.
Really?
They're testing quite a bit of things, yeah. So getting more reports on that. But, yeah, the drivers so far were not impressed with the testing so far.
Well, all I know is most of the drivers are keep complaining about shifting on short tracks.
Yeah.
Just do – I don't know what it is or what you got to do, but just do the thing that makes it to where drivers don't have to shift anymore on short tracks. How about that?
It's the RPMs and the standards. I think this is – it's also that fifth gear because you could run – it's also that RPM advantage of going down to third gear. And once you use that advantage, you're not going to let it go.
Mm-hmm.
So that's probably, you know, it's with the new shifting package. That's more something that can't be changed with just a simple test, a little doohickey. But, they shouldn't be shifting at short tracks.
All right. So that'll do it for our news segment. So now let's move on to our preview of Sunday's Fire Keepers Casino 400 at Michigan International Speedway. All right, so Sunday, 1:30 p.m. Central on the USA Network, the NASCAR Cup Series returns to Michigan International Speedway in Brooklyn, Michigan, the Irish Hills. This is a 2-mile speedway that's been around since 1968. And for a long time, it had two tracks. But here in the last couple of years, it's gone down to one. And the dominance at this track over the last 10 races has been significant. First off, not a single Toyota has won in the last 10 races. Jared, there's been 8 Ford wins, 2 by Chevys. Of that 10 races, Kevin Harvick has been the winner five times.
And the impressive part about the Chevy ordeal was, since 2016, all those Chevy wins belonged to Kyle Larson. That was the time it was 2 Mile Kyle.
Two Mile Kyle. He got his first career win at Michigan, and then the next, like, three.
Next year, yeah. Next year in 2017, he swept at Michigan.
And then he won Auto Club.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was 2 Mile Kyle. It was really, really weird.
But, I mean, I still miss the track of the days where it was just supersonic speed going out there. Like, you could stand at turn one, it's like 212.
Mm-hmm.
But now, you know, back in the day, I think like one of the fastest laps was like a 206 mile per hour. Pole speed last year was 190.
I think, like, Marcos Ambrose set the track record one year. I saw a video on, like, on Twitter.
Yeah, sorry, well, Jeff Gordon ran 206. I think that was right after they repaved it. But yeah, Jeff Gordon with the pole speed of 206.558. That's the average speed going around.
Gosh. Wow. But anyway, I was at this race last year.
That's right.
And it was good. This was what a Michigan race should be.
Yeah.
Like, this is what a Michigan race would have been like back in the 90s, early 2000s, before it got repaved, before the Car of Tomorrow, all that. This is, Michigan is one of those tracks where the next-gen car absolutely is revitalized the racing there.
Yeah.
And
it's a track built for speed. That's the big thing right there.
It was a race where we saw some drama between Ross Chastain and Christopher Bell.
Mm-hmm.
Another episode in As the World Turns, according to Ross Chastain. But no, it was just a good race. That Bubba Wallace, I think he had a pit problem or something.
He was almost there. Yeah, he finished second after starting on the pole.
Yeah.
I was trying to remember that race last year. I did remember Bubba Wallace finished second.
Yeah.
You know, Harvick, like I said, won back-to-back races. But,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's Fords again. Where's the Chevys? Best Chevy was seventh with Kyle Larson. Then you had Alex Bowman in ninth. So, again, I think you're going to be Ford-heavy on these predictions.
So, maybe. Don't not so fast, my friend. But like I said, Bubba had the car to win. This track can sort of kind of act like Kansas to a degree. I'm going to go Bubba Wallace.
Yeah. I'm not surprised by that.
Like, I think after last year, I think he knows what he needs out of the car for that track. And they're just going to pray that nobody screws up on pit road. So, but my backup pick is Kevin Harvick. So,
well, I won't delve into your primary backup picks, which is finished 1-2 last year. Things change in a year. And, we already seen that last weekend with, Chris Buescher winning in Richmond. I'm going to go with Brad Keselowski. He's going to finally break his winless streak.
Brad Keselowski, in case you don't know, is a Michigan native.
Yes.
And he has said on multiple occasions winning at Michigan would be like a bigger deal to him.
I think this is the race that it all comes together.
Yeah.
I think this is going to be the weekend for Brad.
Also be on the lookout for Kyle Busch, because Kyle Busch did win at Auto Club Speedway, which is this track's sister track.
Started third last year, but he wrecked out early. So, yes.
Oh, that was like the first lap.
24. Yeah, it was right after the competition caution. There was a big wreck in turn two.
Yeah, it was early. Yeah, there was some carnage. So, yeah, look out. Bubba Wallace, Kevin Harvick, Brad Keselowski, Kyle Busch. I think those are guys to look out for sure. But, yeah. Yeah.
When's the race, Daniel? We got to make sure to catch it.
1:30 p.m. Central on USA on Sunday. 400 laps, 200 miles. So we'll see what happens. And anyway, I think that's going to do it for us today on Dropping the Hammer. I'm Daniel McFadden. You can follow me on Twitter at on X, rest in peace, Twitter. We're just all going to call it Twitter.
My phone still says it's Twitter.
No, I got the update yesterday. So
my phone still says it's Twitter.
I got the X.
It still says Twitter. I'm fortunate, but you can follow, yes, where on this app that Elon Musk owns.
Anyone with a business card, should get them made, say, the app formerly known as Twitter.
Yeah.
instead of X. But anyway, you can also email me at dmcfadden@adgnewsroom.com. Jared, where can they find you?
Well, they can find me on that app or on Threads at @RealJaredHaas. The check mark is there. And I have officially eclipsed 777 followers on the app formerly known as Twitter.
All right. Congratulations.
Thank you.
But before we go, I do want to address that, as we mentioned at the top of the show, I had a very, very rough weekend. I did wind up in the hospital as an adult for the first time in my life because I made stupid decisions regarding alcohol. So if you are someone who is struggling with alcohol, drinking it too much, whatever, reach out to people, seek help of some sort, because you don't want to wind up in the back of an ambulance on the way to the hospital, fearing for your life. Because that's the position I was in Sunday afternoon. But I'm here. I'm very glad to be here. I'm very glad to have a very, very good support system, not just within my own family, but here at the Democrat Gazette. Just want to say that. Not to end it on a downer note, but
we need you here, Daniel. It's dropping the hammer with Daniel Fagan. Glad you're doing a lot better, able to, like I said, be on the show this weekend, but glad you're getting help and glad you're getting better.
Thank you, Jared. But again, thank you guys for listening, and we will be back here next weekend to talk about NASCAR at Michigan and then preview wherever they're going.
Let's remember the road courses. Yes.
They're going to Indianapolis, right?
Yes.
They're going to Indianapolis. All right. All right. Michigan, Indianapolis, that'll be on tap next week. But again, thank you for listening. And again, I'm glad to be here, glad to be hosting the show, and glad to be talking with Jared about our favorite sport. So that'll do it. Take care. Talk to you guys next weekend.